WMA All News at 7. Good morning. I'm Heather Curtis. A 15-year-old boy becomes the 16th child killed in a homicide this year in D.C. after being shot last night near the convention center. Around 5 p.m., Assistant Police Chief Andre Wright says a person wearing a mask got out of a car and fired into a crowd of teens.
This individual came to shoot a specific group of people in this alley.
No word yet on motive. A second teen has been arrested in connection with the shooting of Washington Commanders rookie running back Brian Robertson Jr. in August. The 17-year-old was 16 when police say he and another teen went up to Wright in Northeast, took out guns, and tried to rob him. One of the teens shot Robinson Jr. twice in the leg, according to police. They didn't get anyone. The 17-year-old was arrested yesterday. The 17-year-old was arrested on Wednesday. Another arrested yesterday. Both are charged with assault with intent to rob while armed. Robinson hasn't let that shooting keep him off the field. Tuesday's midterms could flip control of the House from Democrats to Republicans. A number of congressional races are really tight.
Despite that, President Biden's predicting Democrats are going to stay in control of Congress. He was between campaign stops, making his way from California to Illinois when he told reporters Friday,
"I think we're going to keep the Senate, pick up a seat. I think we have a chance of winning the House. I don't think we're going to not win."
But Republican National Committee Chair Ronna McDaniel is confident, telling Fox her party is seeing huge enthusiasm. Republicans only need to gain one Senate seat and five House seats Tuesday to take control of both chambers. Jill Nato, Fox News.
It's the last day of early in-person voting in Virginia ahead of Tuesday's midterms.
Virginia House hopefuls are making their final pitches to voters. Incumbent Democrat Elaine Luria is saying something unexpected.
"If standing up for what's right means losing an election, so be it. If you're looking for someone who'll just say anything just to win, I'm not your candidate."
Attorney General Jason Miaras cast his ballot early in Virginia Beach for GOP opponent Jen Kiggins.
"I came out and voted for my dear friend Jen Kiggins, who'd be such a great representative, a voice for us in Washington, and just want to encourage everybody to get out to vote."
Rachel Sutherland on WMAL and WMAL.com.
Tonight, you have a chance to win the largest lottery prize in history. The Powerball jackpot is now $1.6 billion. If you want to take a lump sum, you'll get $782.4 million. Maryland Lottery spokesperson Doug Lloyd.
"That's got an estimated cash option of $782.4 million. That would actually be approximately $524.5 million after taxes if someone won it. And it's pretty significant for us. That 37 drawings without a winner.
Your odds of being that winner are minuscule, 1 in 292 million. The Wizards crushed by the Nets, losing 128-86. Game 6 of the World Series tonight. The Astros lead the Phillies 3-2. First pitch around 8. Up next, traffic and weather on News Talk 105.9 WMAL. Here's LBD in the Hadid Carpet Cleaning Traffic Center.
In D.C. on the Anacostia Freeway southbound, traffic is slow between Hay Street and Pennsylvania Avenue. Northbound side of 295, you're not having any delays there. 395 and 695 in the district are clear. In Montgomery County on 270 between the Beltway and Frederick, you're not tapping the brakes. And on the Maryland side of the Beltway, I just checked out the traffic cameras. No delays in Prince George's County or in Montgomery County, either on the inner loop or on the outer loop. And now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Some morning fog, then partly sunny and unseasonably warm. Highs will be in the mid to upper 70s. Mostly cloudy, patchy fog tonight. Lows in the upper 50s to low 60s. Tomorrow, mostly cloudy, unseasonably warm with a few showers. Highs in the low to mid 70s. I'm 7 News meteorologist Matt Ritter in the First Alert Weather Center.
63 degrees in Washington. I'm Heather Curtis on News Talk 105.9 WMAL.
Now, on News Talk 105.9 WMAL.
The Saturday Morning Update.
It is the Saturday Morning Update. It's hour two. I'm Rick Fowler. John Gizzi joins us. He is the White House correspondent, chief political columnist at Newsmax.com. John, good morning.
Good morning, Rick.
Well, we're just a couple days away from Election Day. The Democrats have gone on the attack on just about everything they can bring up, with the exception of the economy, inflation, and crime, three of the most important issues to the majority of Americans. Where do you see this strategy leading, John?
It's a desperation strategy, Rick. The idea is that cultural issues such as gun control or abortion, particularly after the Supreme Court's Dobbs decision, might slow down what is appearing to be a swing to Republicans nationwide. But that only works when the economy is going strong, and the economy, of course, is not going strong. Let me give you a case in point. I interviewed Adam Laxalt, Republican nominee for the U.S. Senate in Nevada and former state attorney general. He said that in a state where inflation is 6.1% and where gasoline costs $5.10 per gallon, that is what people are focused on. And he repeatedly has said his opponent's support for the Biden agenda is what is responsible for this inflation. He's leading in every poll as the Silver State prepares to go to the polls. I might add that this is a pattern, a template, if you will, in other Senate elections. Democrats are trying to tie the Republicans to the court's abortion decision, as well as to shootings that have gone on. And, of course, Republicans are taking the famed advice from Democratic consultant James Carville long ago, it's the economy, stupid.
We've heard a lot about Dr. Oz and John Fetterman. We're hearing a lot about Carrie Lake and Katie Hobbs in Arizona. We're now hearing a lot more about Maggie Hassan and Don Boldock in New Hampshire. What do you think the chances are that he could upset her at this point?
Well, let me put it this way, Rick. I think their odds are a lot higher today on Saturday than they were a week ago on Saturday. Here's why. Don Boldock was running a hard, no-holds-barred campaign against Maggie Hassan, who 6 years ago won the closest Senate race in the United States by just over 1,000 votes. Boldock, of course, is a brigadier general retired from the U.S. Army. He's someone who saw action in Iraq and had suffered from post-traumatic stress. He still has his service dog, Victor, with him at all times. In other words, he's a noticeable candidate. However, for a number of reasons, Senate Republican leader Mitch McConnell's Senate Fund, his personal political action committee, backed down on giving General Boldock a reported $500,000. Then the Heritage Action Fund's Political Action Committee stepped in with a $1 million expenditure. And what was described as a failing campaign a week ago is now shown to be neck and neck in just about every poll in the Granite State. One more thing. General Boldock reiterated his vow that he would not vote for Mitch McConnell as Senate Republican leader if he goes to the Senate.
Another Senate race where the Republican was a real long shot, but now is very close coming down the home stretch toward that finish line, and that is in Arizona with Mark Kelly and Blake Masters. Is the momentum enough in Masters' direction to pull this one out for the Republicans in Arizona?
I'm going to go out on a limb today, Rick, and say yes, and I'll tell you why. Carrie Lake, former TV anchor and the Republican nominee for governor, leads by some fairly healthy margins in different polls that have been conducted. A Fox poll, for example, had her 11 points ahead of Democrat Katie Hobbs. All that will work to the advantage of her ticket mate, Blake Masters, who is locked in a near deadlock, Fox shows, with Democratic Senator Mark Kelly. Now, Kelly won the last time in a special election in large part because voters have warm memories of his wife, former Congresswoman Gabby Gifford, who was wounded in a tragic shooting in Arizona in 2010. She hasn't been visible on the campaign trail. In fact, she's receiving treatment at a hospital in Austin, Texas. In addition, Blake Masters has run as a Libertarian to the point that the actual Libertarian Party nominee for the Senate last week ended his candidacy and endorsed Masters. This came in the heels of a mailing showing Masters with his political hero and role model, former congressman and presidential hopeful Ron Paul. In all, it appears as though Republicans and Libertarians are united behind this candidate in what looks like a Republican year in the Grand Canyon State.
Let's turn to a very prominent member of the Trump administration, Kellyanne Conway. You attended a breakfast with her this past week. What did you learn from that breakfast session?
Well, what did I not learn should be the question. Kellyanne Conway covered so much ground that she stayed an extra half hour beyond the hour that the Christian Science Monitor normally allows at its press breakfasts. She said, among other things, Ronald McDaniel will run and be reelected Republican National Chairman for an unprecedented fourth term. As for someone else's intention of candidacy, she said to keep eyes on Donald Trump, that he has a family wedding with his daughter Tiffany going down the aisle at the end of November, and then he would make an announcement. She certainly hopes it is that he will run in 2024. She believes that is the case, and she said that there are so many other Republicans who are considered heirs to Trump, but her feeling is most of them wouldn't run because voters are going to say, why should I vote for an heir to Trump when I know I can have the real thing? And she said that, like 50% of the Democrats, she hopes Joe Biden doesn't run.
Interesting twist on the Israeli political scene as Benjamin Netanyahu is back and still under indictment?
That's exactly right. Bibi, as he is known, during his last incarnation as prime minister, was indicted and has been tried for receiving illegal gratuities, which range from champagne to chocolates for his wife, Sarah, to his favorite cigars. Now, all of this is against the gratuities laws in Israel, and it's considered a crime against the state. Netanyahu calls it a witch hunt and said if it weren't for him being who he is, he would not be indicted. Well, in any event, Israel had its fourth election in the last 5 years. And guess what? Netanyahu's Likud party, or conservative party, came up with 64 of the 120 seats in the Knesset, or Israeli parliament. This is almost unprecedented that one party and its allies on the right should have a majority and be able to govern. The last time an eight-party coalition, whose common denominator was they hated Netanyahu, won the election and governed for little more than a year. Now voters are once again saying they're giving Israel's longest-serving prime minister a chance, and they themselves are saying, yes, sir, that's my Bibi.
John Gizzi, White House correspondent, chief political columnist at Newsmax.com. We will be watching your coverage of the Tuesday elections very closely, John. Thank you very much.
And I'll be here either to dine on champagne or eat a little crow.
I'd like to get one of BB's Cuban cigars myself. All righty. It is the Saturday morning update. We're at 7:19, and we've got Cheryl Atkinson coming up next. But first, Albie D's in the WMAL Traffic Center.
In Prince George's County on the BW Parkway northbound, traffic is slow in Riverdale between 410 and the Beltway. Southbound side of the BW Parkway, no issues there. On the Maryland side of the Beltway, I just looked at the traffic cameras. Lanes are clear both on the inner loop and on the outer loop. No delays from crashes or construction. In D.C., on the Anacostia Freeway southbound, you're going to find that jammed up between Hayes Street and Pennsylvania Avenue. On 395 and 695 in the district, no delays there. You're not tapping the brakes. And now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Some morning fog, then partly sunny and unseasonably warm. It's already quite mild for this time of the year. Highs will be in the mid to upper 70s. Mostly cloudy, patchy fog tonight. Lows in the upper 50s to low 60s. Tomorrow, mostly cloudy, unseasonably warm with a few showers. Highs in the low to mid 70s. I'm 7 News meteorologist Matt Ritter in the First Alert Weather Center.
63 degrees in the nation's capital. It's 7:20 on the Saturday morning update.
News Talk 105.9 WMAL.
Making sense of the news.
It is the Saturday morning update. I'm Rick Fowler. Cheryl Atkison joins us. She is the host of Full Measure. That's tomorrow morning, ABC 7 at 10 o'clock. Cheryl, good morning.
Good morning.
Your lead story tomorrow involves the Centers for Disease Control. And there have been a lot of questions swirling about CDC throughout the COVID pandemic. And what do you find on the show tomorrow?
Well, that there is a big movement to entirely revamp CDC, blow it up and reinvent it. And you might expect to hear that, as I did, from the scientists who were right about things that got censored because they were off the narrative. But to my surprise, I interviewed one of CDC's biggest allies, the World Health Organization official and a professor, Lawrence Gostin. He agrees. He told me that CDC needs to be redone from top to bottom. This was pretty shocking admission to me from someone who knows Dr. Fauci and supports him very much and is normally a big booster of CDC. So I think that tells you how bad things are after the pandemic when it comes to public trust in an agency that we're supposed to be able to rely on. But I think people are questioning a lot of that now.
Well, CDC did a self-analysis during the summer. What were the findings there?
Well, they acknowledged that they utterly failed at their biggest moment with COVID because of all the confusion and mistakes. But I'll go a step further and say we documented intentional disinformation that they put out. We'll go over that in my program on Sunday. But that's, I think, what really pierced the heart of people in terms of confidence, to think that CDC is not just putting out wrong information, but they're doing some of it on purpose. That kind of makes you question everything.
And ironically, the CDC director contracted COVID, and not just once, right?
They won't answer the question. I'll tell you about that in a minute. But I think this is her third case. She got it twice within 9 days in the last couple of weeks, probably not long after her most recent booster. But we called to try to clarify that with CDC. They didn't want to do an interview with us for my report. But we said, hey, is this her third case of COVID? And has she had 5 shots, which it seems to be by my calculation. And I wanted to know when was her last booster compared to when she came down with COVID, because it seems like a lot of people are getting their booster and getting COVID shortly after, which would indicate it doesn't provide protection for very long. CDC wouldn't answer any of those questions. They said they had no comment. And you'd think they would want us, you know, want to help us get our facts straight and make sure we have the accurate information. But I was pretty surprised. It doesn't do much to build that confidence when they're still acting that way about information.
So Election Day is Tuesday, and the infamous words of James Carville, "It's the economy, stupid." Democrats are focusing on just about anything but. And you have Scott Thuman in the field. What did he find?
We just asked him to dig a little deeper because, as you know, Democrats thought and hoped at one point abortion would be a bigger issue for many people and would really help swing things, or at least maybe help them not have big losses or even retain control or majority in Congress. Why isn't that the case? Why is the economy hitting home for so many voters, including some Democrats and many independents? Scott's going to dig into that for us in his report on Sunday.
We've seen the contentious nature of politics and what it's done to relationships and friendships. And you have a story tomorrow where people are even taking it a step further when it comes to red versus blue.
Well, I'll bet people know people who are in this boat that we're going to describe in the story. Lisa Fletcher is the reporter on this. Or maybe it fits them themselves. They're starting to, we call it the big sort, self-sort where they live geographically on the basis of how they feel politically and socially, because they discovered, particularly during COVID, that they were divided from their neighbors sometimes. They didn't feel the same way. They didn't fit in. They weren't comfortable. Maybe their communities are changing the last couple of years compared to how they used to be. So there's a big trend where bluer cities are sometimes becoming bluer, more Democrat. Republican and red places are becoming redder. We know a lot of people move into places like Florida, people moving away from California. So So Leaf is going to look into that trend for us.
All tomorrow morning, 10 o'clock, ABC 7, Full Measure with Cheryl Atkison. Cheryl, thank you so much. 7:25, Saturday morning update on WMAL. And coming up, we've got Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer, a look at the latest on Ukraine. We'll also look at the North Korean missile launches, a barrage of them this past week. And KT McFarland coming up as well as we count down the days to the midterm elections on Tuesday. Stay with us right here on WMAL.
WMAL-FM, Woodbridge, Washington, a Cumulus Media station.
Making sense of the news.
News Talk 105.9.
WMAL. News now.
WMAL News at 7:30. Good morning, I'm Heather Curtis. A 15-year-old is the second teen charged with assaulting and robbing Washington Commanders rookie running back Brian Robertson Jr. in D.C. in August. Police arrested the teen, who was 14 when it happened, yesterday. A 17-year-old was arrested on Wednesday. Robinson was shot in the leg twice, but isn't letting that get in the way of his football goals. He's been back on the field.
I got to stay focused and locked in on what's most important to me and what I want to be, you know, worried about, and that's, you know, football.
He's busy preparing for tomorrow's game against the Vikings. Kickoff's at 1. A 15-year-old is dead this morning after what D.C. police say was a targeted attack yesterday. Assistant Police Chief Andre Wright says a person got out of a car and started shooting into a crowd of teens in an alley near the convention center. He's the 16th kid who's the victim of a homicide in the city this year.
It's a disturbing trend to see so many of our youth being involved in these petty disputes, where they end up introducing a firearm into this equation.
Police say the suspect drove off in a silver Mercedes with tinted windows. If you live in Virginia and want to vote early in person, today's your last day to do that. There are three closely watched congressional races where Republicans are hoping to unseat Democratic incumbents and help their party take back control of the House. Those races are in the state's 7th, 10th, and 2nd districts. WMAL Sports, the Wizards crushed by the Nets, losing 128-86. Game 6 of the World Series is tonight. The Astros lead the Phillies 3-2. Traffic and weather next on WMAL. Traffic and weather, here's Albie D in the Hadid Carpet Cleaning Traffic Center.
Good morning. On the Beltway in Virginia, you're not hitting the brakes on the inner loop or on the outer loop. No delays from crashes or construction. 66 in Fairfax County, lanes are clear in both directions. On 95 in Virginia, between the Beltway and Fredericksburg, no issues being reported northbound or southbound. In D.C., the Anacostia Freeway southbound is jammed up between East Capitol Street and Pennsylvania Avenue. And in Prince George's County on the BW Parkway northbound, traffic is slow between Good Luck Road overpass and the Beltway. And now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Storm Watch 7 forecast.
Today, some morning fog, then partly sunny, unseasonably warm, highs in the mid to upper 70s. Tonight, mostly cloudy, patchy fog, lows in the upper 50s to lower 60s. 63 degrees in Washington. I'm Heather Curtis on News Talk 105.9 WMAL.
It is the Saturday morning update, 7:36. I'm Rick Fowler. Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer joins us. He is the author of Operation Dark Heart, the president of the London Center for Policy Research, and also the host of the Thought to Action podcast. Tony, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Rick. Always great to be here.
So North Korea has launched another 4 missiles so far today. Friday, right. South Korea said that it had to scramble warplanes in response to 180 North Korean military flights near the shared border. North Korea again demanding yesterday that the U.S. and South Korea halt provocative air exercises. Is this just the usual, or could this get worse?
Well, it's the usual, but the circumstance of the background and the larger context, it's worse. The North Koreans have returned to a series of provocations to draw attention to their issues. And if you note, Rick, that, you know, under President Trump, the previous president, those provocations dropped off to pretty much nothing. And the reason for that is because there was a dialogue ongoing. There was an off-ramp for Kim Jong-un being created to reduce and even hopefully eliminate in the Korean War. Remember, North Korea and South Korea are technically at a state of war still. This is only an armistice created to put the war on pause. So that's why you constantly see these things in the news. And obviously China has a big role to play in all of this. And while I think China says one thing, they did say publicly about not supporting a nuclear war between Russia and anyone else, you know, about the Ukrainian issue, I do believe that they're encouraging this this current temper tantrum, if you will, from UN. So, the technique is common, the timing is peculiar, and it does mean something in the larger chess game of global politics and what we're trying to deal with right now.
And, you know, you mentioned President Trump and how the North Koreans acted under President Trump. When you look
right.
at Xi Jinping, you look at Vladimir Putin and, of course, Kim Jong-un, the contrast is just stark. I mean, it's almost like a 180. The minute the Biden administration came in, these guys all started acting up.
So both the people that President Trump had in charge, well, you know, there was some who should not have been at the senior level, some should. And President Trump himself created a perception of leadership, and the international community, especially Xi and Putin and Un, all knew that there could be a grave penalty for doing something provocative against the United States. During President Trump's time, Chairman of the Joint Chiefs, General Joseph Dunford, Fighting Joe was his nickname, there's a hint, was the chairman. He actually did defeat ISIS within the first year of the Trump administration, so there's some decisive action for you. And Trump himself has said a number of times over his term, essentially working to play the man. He did what the Reagan administration did, what President Reagan did. He played the man, the leader, not the policy or the nation. He understood how to do that. And so as a guy who came out of the real estate community, Trump, he knew how to negotiate, he knew how to intimidate, and there was credibility behind his words. And as much as anything right now, Rick, nobody believes anything from Joe Biden. This White House has zero credibility, and I have a feeling after next week, world leaders are going to see that Biden is even more compromised politically than ever before. So those things that were good under Trump were decisive, no longer exist. So any deterrent to be credible has to have the belief in the enemy's mind that it's credible. At this point, Rick, there's no such credibility.
So there's an article in the Daily Mail, and it references an address by the Navy Admiral Charles A. Richard. He's commander yep. of STRATCOM. Richard warning that further investment in the U.S. military is needed in the face of rising threats. The Ukraine crisis that we're in right now, this is just the warm-up. And he said, quote, the big one is coming, warning against America falling behind China. What is your assessment of where we are vis-a-vis China?
Well, this is part two of any credible deterrent. And I'll start off by asking a question I've asked you before. Rick, do you know anybody who currently drives a 1979 Ford Pinto? Anybody?
No.
No. And that's there's a reason for that, because that technology is long since expired. That level, that year of technology is essentially what we have in our nuclear weapons fleet. Most of our weapons are from that era. And there's been no effort. Well, strike that. There's been an effort to upgrade. That is to say that I sat on the nuclear strategy forum, and I was in a room when people were proposing to upgrade these things 20 years ago. And both sides of the political spectrum have fought the upgrading and updating of our nuclear capabilities. So this now is coming back to bite us. They're talking. They moved 200 gravity bombs, B-61 bombs, dial-a-nukes, that, again, were designed during the Cold War as our first deterrent against Vladimir Putin's 2000. So when you do things in the context of actual kind of these are the weapons we can use and these are the consequences you can face, when you have weapons which really don't telegraph your capacity to do great damage to your adversary, the enemy just doesn't buy it. And I think that's where we're at again with Putin. So the admiral's correct. I think there's been neglect, bordering on criminal neglect by the defense establishment. And again, I'm not a neocon. I don't believe we should be out there trying to provoke people to do something. I'm just saying if the policy decision is to have a deterrent, you got to have a credible deterrent. And the admiral's correct. We just don't have one based on the technology available to use potentially against an adversary in a nuclear standoff.
So the German Chancellor, Olaf Scholz, meeting with Chinese President Xi Jinping this week. First visit by a leader of the Group of Seven, the G7, first leader of the G7 to China in 3 years, high-level business delegation, and the focus, the German economic ties with Beijing. He's being criticized by some for cozying up to President Xi, but they did say something interesting about nukes and Russia.
Well, the whole thing came down to the threat from Xi and basically telling Putin you don't want to go to nuclear war, which is not a bad warning, because obviously Putin's been using some very bellicose language, and I would argue trying to get the West to overreact regarding that language. But yeah, President Xi, the premier of China, actually basically said, you know, look, it's not a good idea. But what's more important here, Rick, beyond that, is the fact that China is meeting with Germany on the economic issues. Ultimately, I believe that the objectives of the Chinese and Russians both are to undermine and destroy the U.S.'s ability to have its currency, our currency, the dollar, used as that for all petrochemical sales, to remove our currency as the fiat currency of choice for that. Ultimately, if that happened, and I think that's why Xi met with the Chancellor of Germany, they want to undermine the economic power of the United States. That would be the ultimate blow without firing a shot if they could do that. So I think that's more of what this focused on, although the nuclear issue is valid.
This whole notion of sort of the technology, what about the depletion of our resources? The U.S. government yesterday announcing another $400 million of equipment to go to Ukraine. What is that doing to our readiness?
Well, that's another issue that people all observe. They've depleted the wartime petroleum reserve. They depleted the stock of ultra-modern nuclear, of ultra-modern small-aperture tactical weapons, robots and artillery and things like that. So the answer is it obviously telegraphs a time of weakness, because it's going to take time for us to replenish all of those things over the next 2 years. And again, I think the time of maximum danger, it's not going to be now. I think everything's going to go fine for the midterms. But I think you can see some real issues coming up next spring, both with Russia and China challenging the United States if Biden continues with the current set of policies.
Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer, Thought to Action podcast, which got this week?
So we did some previews of issues we're looking at. We did one called the Stalinization of DHS. There you go. That's a pretty cool title. And something that we explore in great detail because of the current issues relating to the back doors have been discovered with big tech by the government into big tech. And we'll be covering the midterm elections on Tuesday. So it should be fun.
Thank you much. Thought to Action podcast at londoncenter.org. Tony, we'll see you next week.
Take care.
7:46, KT McFarland coming up next. But first, LBD's in the WML Traffic Center.
In Maryland, on the Beltway, I looked at the cameras both in Prince George's County and in Montgomery County. No delays on the inner loop or on the outer loop. Staying in Montgomery County, on 270 between the Beltway and Frederick, not tapping the brakes on the northbound side or on the southbound side. Now into Prince George's County. If you're traveling between the two Beltways, on the BW Parkway northbound in Greenbelt, traffic is slow between Good Luck Road overpass and the Beltway. And on 50 in Prince George's County, between the Beltway and the Bay Bridge, no delays on the eastbound side or on the westbound side. And now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Some morning fog, then partly sunny and unseasonably warm. It's already quite mild for this time of the year. Highs will be in the mid to upper 70s. Mostly cloudy, patchy fog tonight. Lows in the upper 50s to low 60s. Tomorrow, mostly cloudy, unseasonably warm with a few showers. Highs in the low to mid 70s. I'm 7 News meteorologist Matt Ritter in the First Alert Weather Center.
63 degrees in the nation's capital at 7:47.
Monday, it's the final countdown, the last day before the midterm elections, and we got you covered on all the national and local races. O'Connor and Company, 5 to 9 a.m. on WMAL.
7:50, Saturday morning update. KT McFarland joins us. President Trump's deputy national security advisor, a board member of the American Conservative Union, and the author of the best-selling book, Revolution, Trump, Washington, and We the People. KT, always an honor to have you with us.
Honor and a pleasure. Thank you.
the Democrats' desperation, now claiming that democracy dies Tuesday if Republicans win. And I'm not kidding. President Obama has said it out on the campaign trail. Hillary Clinton ramping it up this week, as well as President Biden. Biden in Washington for a speech Wednesday night. He mentions democracy and the attack on democracy 38 times in the speech. He mentions the economy once. What's wrong with this picture, KT?
Well, the only thing that's going to die on Tuesday is the woke agenda. And a bunch of, as Governor Ron DeSantis says, a bunch of tired old Democrat donkeys and their careers. Look, I've been traveling all around the country in the last couple of months. And the country normally cares about elections, you know, every 4 years. And if it's a scandal in Washington, let's say the FBI, which encourages a lot of division and controversy in Washington, the rest of the country doesn't really care about that. It doesn't affect them. You know, foreign wars, well, unless their kids are fighting in them, doesn't really matter to them. But the two things that have gotten into the homes of every single American are the woke agenda in the schools and the economy and inflation and gas prices and the big inflation and food prices. And that doesn't go away. So all of a sudden, you've mobilized the average American who normally doesn't pay a lot of attention, who says, I don't like the people who are peddling this and grooming my children and forcing this woke agenda down our throats, and then criminalizing the parents who dare to speak up in objection. So the Democrats, they're going to lose big, and I think for sure they lose the House. They probably lose the Senate. So then let's look ahead. What happens after that? Well, you know that they're in trouble if they've lost the New York Times, and even the New York Times has started to criticize Joe Biden. So I think the Democrats by Wednesday are going to be needing a scapegoat. So who's the obvious scapegoat? President Biden. And I think there'll be an urge on the part of the Democrats, if not publicly, then privately, to get Biden to announce as soon as possible that he's not running for reelection. The Democrats know he can't win. They know Vice President Harris certainly can't win if she's the nominee. And they need to open the door to all their other candidates early on to get a head start on the Republicans. The longer Biden waits to announce he's not running, the more difficult it makes things for the Democrats to nominate anybody other than Vice President Harris. And it also gives the Republicans a major lead on fundraising. Plus, the Democrats don't have much of a bench. Who do they have? So they have Gavin Newsom, a possible major candidate. He's going to be reelected on Tuesday as governor of California, and then he'll immediately start campaigning for president. But it's hard to see how this current far-left Democrat Party, which chooses a standard-bearer who looks like a country club Republican, and after Gavin Newsom is a very thin bench. So I think that the Democrats will want as much time as possible to find and promote other potential candidates. Then the other thing worth looking at, Rick, is what happens starting on January 20th on Capitol Hill. It's far more important for the Republicans to take the House and the Senate, although I do think they'll take both. But the House, because the key committee chairmanships are going to really capable, committed, courageous Republicans. And Congressman Jim Jordan is going to end up being the bravest man in America. He's already made it clear, reportedly with a 1,000-page roadmap of how the Judiciary Committee, which he will then become chairman of, will investigate and fumigate the partisan bureaucracies and bureaucrats in the FBI and Department of Justice. I mean, I was a victim myself of their political prosecutions, and I'm not a vindictive person by nature, but I do believe people should get their just desserts, and I think that that will happen. I also think other chairmen of Republican chairmen of House committees will be equally effective. For them, it's not going to be business as usual.
So what does this mean for the Biden agenda? If you have at least the House, maybe both chambers, what does that mean for him? Can he get anything done shy of just executive orders?
No, his agenda's dead in the water, rightfully so. You know, I've been in the White House, in and out of the White House for my 50-year career. There's only so much oxygen in the Oval Office. And if it's all taken up by worrying about investigations and who's going to be subpoenaed and how are we going to fight and how are we going to uncover this, you know, starting with Hunter Biden's laptop and Joe Biden himself on all the way down to director of the FBI, et cetera, everybody's going to be preoccupied. They'll be so worried about their own careers and their own potential liabilities and exposure to prosecution, either legal prosecution or certainly losing their political reputations. They're not going to have time to do all the nasty stuff they wanted to do. Plus, they won't have any leverage. Capitol Hill isn't going to pay any attention to what they want. And they'll be effectively the president, vice president. They'll effectively be lame ducks. Well, as you point out, the president can still sign an executive order, which is valid only through his presidency, like a student loan giveaway program. But the House can deal with that by refusing to fund these giveaway schemes. The other thing is that everyone, I mean, Democrat economists agree that we're heading to a prolonged and serious recession, if not worse, over the next 2 years. And that in itself will probably determine the 2024 election and deliver it to a Republican president. I've always believed, and I have for a good 15 years, that the key to everything is going to be the American energy industry and restarting the American fossil fuel industry, particularly clean American natural gas. It's cheap, it's safe, it's abundant. We have enough natural gas in the United States from what we already know is there, not even counting what we think might be there eventually. We have enough to power the world for a couple hundred years. So it's going to tee it up for the next Republican president to reverse President Biden's war on American fossil fuels. It'll be an immediate stimulant to the American economy. And it will also do wonders for American foreign policy because it'll bankrupt, push the price of energy down, oil and gas down. Europe can depend on us, not Russia. And Russia will be bankrupt. They won't be able to invade other countries or fight other wars. I think that if the 2022 midterms are a warm-up act, and 2024, it'll be the new Reagan revolution. And as it was in 1980 when President Reagan was elected, the Democrats will be banished, that far left wing of the Democrat Party. They'll be banished to the pages of the Washington Post and MSNBC, if they still exist, for a generation. And so be it. They really have deserved what they've done to the country. They've deserved the punishment they're about to be wreaked on them.
Got 1 minute left. If Biden says he is not running for reelection, he's a lame duck. We know what it means here. What does it mean amongst our adversaries?
Well, that's the important thing. As a foreign policy person, that's what I'm worried about, is that it's like during Watergate when I was in the White House with President Nixon and working for Henry Kissinger. The worry we have is that's when our adversaries look at America and they say a president who's distracted, a lame duck, political prosecutions, this is our moment to act. And almost everybody agrees the American military has badly fallen behind. And we've all seen how the Chinese have now just elected a president for life, and the Russians are still looking for trouble. So it's a time of very great vulnerability for the United States.
K.T. McFarland, the author of Revolution, Trump, Washington, and We the People. K.T., as always, thank you so much.
Thank you, Rick.
That's it for the Saturday Morning Update. Reminder that Garden Sense, now 1 o'clock Saturday afternoons, so we will see you coming up later on today. Garden Sense at 1 here on WMAL.
WMAL-FM, Woodbridge, Washington, a Cumulus Media station.
Making sense of the news.
News Talk 105.9.